This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
So what is the state's case against the 8 accused in the VBS saga? We'll go through the names at the moment, and then we'll have a conversation about the case against the 8 accused in the VBS saga. And yesterday we saw the emergence of Philip Trutta, who is the former CFO of VBS Bank, and his intention is to turn state witness. He's already indicated that he will be pleading guilty. So what does this mean for the 7 other accused, including somebody like Andile Ramaunga, who was Andile Ramaunga, who in the VBS report indicates that he did receive money from VBS. He admitted to that in the Mutau report. So we'll be having that conversation at the moment. We're taking your calls as well on 0861 987 000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM 987. So here they are: Chifiwe Matodzi, Andile Ramaunga, also have Phillips Trutta, Popi Mukotobwane, we also have Ntlantla Malaba, Parapala, Ramikosi, as well as Chifumbulibu, Nesane, and the final one is Paul Makula. So what are the charges against them? But more importantly, I think after the appearance of Philip Trutta, what does this mean for the state's case in the VBS saga? As I've indicated, we're taking your calls on 0861 987 000. Your tweets at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM 987. We're speaking to a Power News senior reporter, Ndaeto Netonje, who's joining us on the line. We also have Khalid Osman, who's a civil and criminal attorney. Ndaeto, let me start off with you. Good morning. I think it came as no surprise, eh?
Yeah, it came as surprise, and mainly because Trutta that was cooperating with Terimutau in that report. So most of the information that Advocate Mutau, or not most, some of the information that he would have gotten would have been through the assistance of Philip Trutta. So when he eventually appeared in court, what came as a surprise, though, was the fact that he did not appear with the other 7. And when he appeared alone, that's when he indicated that he would be turning state witness and pleading guilty, while the other 7 had indicated that they would not be pleading guilty. So one just suspects that maybe there was some sort of separation from the others because he was going the opposite direction.
Because I was wondering that if as far back as 2018 during this investigation he had already come clean, why did it take this long for him to even be to be arrested?
So the explanation from the Hawks is that they were not relying on the Terimutau report for investigations. They conducted their own investigations. And you would remember the indictment that I shared with you, Aldrin. It's based on only 122 million rand that would have been looted between the 8 accused. Now, if you go to the Terimutau report, Chifua Matodzi alone is alleged to have benefited well over 300 million rand. So what the Hawks could be able to trace and bring to court factually was only 122 million rand that was divided amongst the 8, if you like. Now, because of that investigation, it took them that long before they could get to a point of bringing the docket, to the NPA, and the NPA saying, of these 8, who would be the most possible that we can sit and work with? You would remember that there was widespread speculation that it would be Robert Madzonga coming through.
Yeah.
And from that interview that we had with Kotane, Thabiso Kotane, a few weeks ago, It appears that it's not Madzonga, but it's actually Philip Truta, one who was very central in making sure that the monies move in and out and overseeing all of the activities within the bank as far as finances are concerned.
Just remind us, why was there that expectation that it would be Robert who turns a state witness?
Because Robert is right at the top of that report by Advocate Terry Motau. In fact, he's amongst the top beneficiaries, if, according to Terry Motau, who looted from VBS Mutual Bank. But they could not pin him down, and he was never part of those that were arrested. So the speculation was that because he was not arrested and was implicated in a widespread report, that also implicates the company that Madzonga was CEO of. It was speculated that he was having negotiations with either the Hawks or the National Prosecuting Authority. And yesterday proved to be the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm. And also the confirmation coming from the NPA side and the spokesperson saying that, well, as it stands, he will be turning state witness. Do we know what's standing in between him turning state witness at the moment?
So what happened yesterday, and I was trying to listen very attentively to the prosecutor. He said that the indication was made from Truta's side that he was going to plead guilty and he was willing to turn state witness. Now, yesterday was only a bail application, and they are still going to plead, which would happen on the 8th of October. So between now and then, depending on cooperation and information that would have come to the table that the NPA would seek assistance with as far as Truta is concerned, a decision would then be reached. But the NPA also indicated that they have no reason to believe that the negotiations between them and Truta would fall through the cracks. In fact, they were confident to tell the court that it would happen. And if you listened to the affidavit by Philip Truta himself, apologizing for his role to the victims of VBS Bank, those that lost from the looting, It was a clear indication that he, right from the onset, even at bail application, he is saying, I did wrong, and I believe that I will be able to shed some light on how the wrong was committed.
Okay. So, Khalid, good morning and welcome to this conversation as well. So
good
the
morning,
state
Aldrin.
Is confident, thank you, the state is confident that Truto will not turn on them, that he will become a state witness. But I just want to quickly just suppose that to Muater Mutau says in his report about Truto, he says that I'm mindful of the fact that Truto's evidence must be approached with great circumspection as he is a self-confessed fraudster. So what is it that the state would be so confident in that this particular person will be a state witness?
Okay, you see, he has access to certain evidence. Yeah, you must know the objective of the prosecuting authority is not to secure a conviction, but to find the truth of a matter. So if Mr. Truta is going to come with evidence, be it real evidence or documentary evidence, which sets out and allows the National Prosecuting Authority to have a stronger case, then that is what is going to come forward. And regarding what Advocate said about the cautionary rule, there is a case, State versus Zibi. And in that case, it said that the court is fully aware of the possible dangers lurking in the acceptance of an accused who has turned state witness.
Yeah.
The court is aware that it must be extremely careful about accepting his evidence, as he may be just out to save his own skin. And that's a reality. People want to avoid criminal sanction, so they turn state witness. But if you turn state witness, it does not mean you're going to be absolved of the charge. The charges will be withdrawn. It does not mean that.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean? What is in it for somebody who is a co-accused and then decides to turn state witness?
Okay, let me refer you to Section 112 of the Criminal Procedure Act, which deals with a plea of guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Where an accused pleads guilty and the prosecutor accepts that charge, the accused on that statement may be sentenced. So what's going to happen is, it'll go to sentencing, he's guilty, he saved the court's time, he didn't waste the court's time, it'll come to sentencing. At that time, the court will take into account his actions throughout the trial. Now here we're dealing with Mr. Tuta, who apologized, who is showing that he's remorseful. So the court, it becomes a mitigating circumstance. So it, even though he might be sentenced, he might be sentenced for a lesser period or a smaller fine, depending what sentence is passed.
Okay, so 0861-987-000. We're taking your tweets at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk. Also, you can tweet at PowerFM987. Khalid, I just quickly want to ask you, in relation to, for instance, the case of the former police commissioner, Jackie Silibi, in where Brad Kebble turned a state key witness, and the negotiations that happened there, would this be a possibility for somebody like Tuta as well?
Okay, look, here we're dealing with whatever happens has to be done in terms of statute.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll refer you to an article which I found. It was written by a lady by the name of Jo Marie Fussell. She's with the University of Free State, and it's around the law of evidence. She refers to a case of State versus Mia. And in that case, at the bail proceedings, the accused pleaded guilty, and he gave a statement.
Yeah.
So it says that the specific record of bail proceedings shall form part of the record of the trial of the accused, provided that the accused elects to testify during the course of the bail proceedings, and the court must inform him that anything they say may be used against him at the trial, and such evidence becomes admissible in any subsequent proceedings. So now that word may be used. You've got to use the interpretation. And it says basically it leaves the door open for the prosecutor to either withdraw the charges or leave the charges in place. It gives them that room to maneuver, to negotiate. So as yet, you can't really say what's going to happen because Mr. Tuta must still give his statement. The IO must take his statement. Once that is done, the prosecutor needs to go through the statement, verify the facts, go through the evidence, see whether the evidence is actually going to help in the case and that he's willing to accept him as a witness.
Okay, 0861-987-000, your tweets at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM987. We're in conversation with Khalid Osman, who's a civil and criminal law attorney. We also have our Power News senior reporter, Ndayat, who's part of the conversation. We're taking your calls now on 0861-987-000. Wudana, good morning.
Good morning, Andrea. That drug dealer who held the court to sentence Jackie Silibi was not even touched. Yep, there was confirmation that he was a drug dealer, but was not there. You know this person, if he tends to be a state witness, I'm afraid he's going to be eliminated. Like the fellows of SAMU at Limpopo. They've been killed, those fellows there, who tried to speak the truth. I wonder the NPA or the police, they've got the capacity to protect him. I don't think even if he's credible or not, as long as he can prove or help the state to send down those guys, I think that is what matters. Reference to Jackie Silibi. The crook helped the state to sentence Jackie Silibi. So they disregard whether he was a drug leader or, a drug peddler or not.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
No, thank you for that. And Dayatso, do we know where Truta is at the moment?
What we know is that yesterday in court, in his affidavit and that of his wife, it was indicated that he was suffering from anxiety and he needed to be institutionalized. They gave the name of the clinic in court, which he would be admitted in. Not sure if it would be, when you consider what the previous caller has said, it would be okay for me to say it and or just leave it to those that speculated, that heard it yesterday. So, and he was supposed to have been admitted in that clinic yesterday afternoon, pending the results of his COVID-19 test. You would remember that initially, what was said was that he was not, he would not have been able to appear with the other seven because he had tested positive for COVID-19 and was under quarantine. Now, the quarantine period ended around Friday, but he was still waiting for his second results that would clear him. And those results were meant to be released yesterday. And if they came back negative, he would then need to be admitted to that mental clinic. But also, Aldrin, there's been talk of him using his mental capacity as an excuse not to face trial. He indicated in his affidavit that while this may be the case, having some mental challenges, he is ready and he will be willing to stand trial and it would not be a problem.
Was there anything said about witness protection?
Nothing was said about witness protection. And I think if, the issue of him being taken to a clinic is anything to go by, and I can only speculate on this, Aldrin, I suspect that that is in inverted commas the witness protection that he may be going into and disguised as him going to a facility. I mean, I don't see how it would make sense to publicly say which clinic he's going to be admitted in and then at the same time say he's going to turn state witness when there are people that have been killed allegedly by those or by because of their or their voices against what happened at VBS.
Khalid, would you say that some of those apprehensions are justifiable?
Oh yeah, definitely. Because we don't know, we've seen past cases, people turn state witness, they got away scot-free, but other people turn state witness and they've still been sentenced. But I think, like the first caller said, we've got to look at the big picture. Are we willing to let one go and take seven or at the risk of losing all eight? I think that's the question that is facing everyone.
Just quickly, when it comes to witness protection, what is it that the state looks into?
Okay, look, when you're talking the in terms of legislation, the Consumer Protection Act, it refers not to witness protection, it refers to the detention of witnesses. This is Section 185. So anytime the Attorney General feels that a personal safety is in danger, that a personal may abscond, that he may tamper with the case or intimidate other witnesses, or it's in the interest of justice that this person be detained in custody, then they will look at this avenue as what you call now witness protection. There's not only some debt for the protection of the witness. In certain cases, they use it to protect the public and other witnesses.
Yeah. Okay. Bovungane, good morning.
Good morning, Adrian. Quickly, you know what, Adrian? I don't see anything wrong for the guy or for any witness who will come and tend to be a state witness, regardless of how much he participated on that looting. As long as he will come with a useful information. You will recall also, Adrian, that all these witnesses have indicated that they will plead not guilty, which means this guy will come with the crucial information. My only worry now is about his life. You will recall that, especially in Limpopo, like your colleague there previously correctly said, there were a lot of people who were killed, who were linked to this, who were vocal about this VPS looting. Now, my only worry now, as I've already noticed, that the NPA event indicated about the protection of these guys. I know they will drag their feet until maybe something has happened. I know about that, because even the NPA is questionable nowadays. Ever since the disbandment of Scorpion, these guys that are here now, their conduct is very questionable, but I'm not there. My only worry now is the life of this guy. Definitely, if they don't take precautions very early and protect him, then something might happen.
Yeah. Okay, no, thank you so much for that. And I see St. Letty correcting me. Thank you so much for this, St. Letty, as well. I made a mistake earlier, and I said Kebble turned state witness. I meant Agliotti turned state witness. It is just after 10:30. It's time for Power News Headlines.
Tweet Aldrin at Aldrin Sampier.
And you can also call 0861-987-000 and tweet at PowerFM987. Let me just quickly take this call from Abram before I go back to my guest. Abram, good morning.
Good morning. Two things. One, I'm concerned of the admissibility of evidence of a co-accused against another, because I learned that there's case law that it's inadmissible. And two, are we not opening a loophole for appeal, taking a person with anxiety or psychological illness to testify against these people, and at the later stage it comes out to say, no, this person was not a sound and sober person. He was not rational when he did this. And finally, is this person referred to the clinic under Section 77 by the court, or is it at his own volition? And what is the impact of that? Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. And so do we know?
No,
his referral to the clinic.
No. We don't. What we just know is that there was a voluntary, submission that he would want to be admitted, and it was through the affidavit of his wife that he said that she said, following events of the past week, she saw it fit to have him evaluated, and it was taken as a decision. It wasn't clear whether it was a referral.
But why? Because I suspect that there are probably some of those amongst the co-accused who believe that he is not, that he may not be in the right, what do they call it, sanity, state of mind, to be testifying. And that's the reason why the wife then all of a sudden says that no, he must go for a psychiatric evaluation.
No, so in that affidavit that the wife deposed, it clearly details events that happened prior to him appearing in court yesterday. Forgetfulness, speaking things that don't make sense, and just walking out of the house and doing so. There were a lot of things that happened that were detailed in that affidavit that would have led the wife to say she suspects that he is not okay. And if you remember in the beginning, I did mention that 15 or 18 years ago, between 15 and 18 years ago, that would have meant that he was around 29 or 30 years old, because it's 47. He suffered an anxiety attack, and he was admitted in hospital for that. So they then said that he was showing the exact same symptoms that he had when that anxiety attack happened those many years ago. And that was one of the reasons why they felt that he needed to be institutionalized.
So what, the relapse was when?
In the weeks leading up to, in actual fact, in the days leading up to the court case. In fact, his lawyer stated that he had spent days trying to get a hold of him, and he just couldn't get a hold of him because he wasn't even active on his phone, trying to alert him that there is a pending arrest. And he was even caught by surprise, in inverted commas, when he was arrested on Friday, because he had not been communicating with his lawyer in the days leading up to yesterday's court appearance. And the reasons given there is because he was mentally unstable.
But does this mean that this the investigating officer, as well as the NPA, wouldn't have spoken to him before that particular incident?
That's precisely what was said in court, that they would have spoken to him prior to the arrest of the seven, because he was suspected to be part of those that would have been arrested. After that, he went into quarantine. Now, during the quarantine period, those couple of days after the seven appeared, that's when all these mental issues would have happened, and that's that's prior to that's post the engagement with the IO, because he would have engaged him as well as the time that he was engaging the other seven.
Okay, Khalid, what does the state then make in such a case where you have somebody who is said to have suffered the side effects of anxiety, including forgetfulness and so forth? Is that person really of sound mind to be testifying and considered to be a credible witness as well?
Okay, based on the information we have at present, we only have the wife's affidavit. We've got no expert medical testimony. We don't have a psychiatrist testimony. He hasn't undergone any tests to clarify that he's in fact has a problem. And also, you should remember in law, when it comes to people that do not have mental capacity, the law recognizes that you have what is called a lucid interval, that interval of clarity. You're not at all times you won't have loss of mental capacity all the time. You'll have this lucid interval where you'll be able to think clearly. So the courts take cognizance of this fact. So there are times when, in this case, he might have stress issues, but it won't be sufficient to say that he's not a credible witness unless you have medical testimony to back it up.
Yeah. Okay. And then there's a call that we got from Abram earlier on, who says, is the evidence from a co-accused really admissible?
Okay, now we come back to the point initially where we discussed the point of taking a state witness evidence with circumspect. You must remember the first rule of evidence, if it's there's a few rules of evidence. One of them is the cautionary rule.
Yeah.
So the cautionary rule applies to certain types of witnesses, certain types of evidence. So if you've got a single witness that cannot be corroborated, it has to be treated with caution. You have a co-accused return state witness. I quoted you that case earlier.
Yes.
Yeah, it's clear that the court should see whether or not the man is only trying to save his own skin.
Okay.
So there's a lot of cautionary rules which would apply.
Okay. Let's go back to the power line on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. A tweet here from Tabo, who says, this case is already jeopardized by the judge who assigned to it. He has already started giving VBS looter Philip Trutto a special treatment by giving him a 50,000 rand bail, while others get 100,000. Mind you, he's not a state witness yet. He only intends. Yes, that's the truth. He only intends. And Mutsipi says, on the VBS saga, my question is, if Trutter is really remorseful for his corruption, why didn't he hand himself to the police way before he was formally charged and brought to court? What's stopping him before? What was stopping him before? To some of those questions, but let me just quickly take this call from Joshua. Joshua, you are a prosecutor.
No, I was a prosecutor.
Oh, you were a prosecutor.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Good morning and welcome.
Morning, Adrian. You know, my question is, do they really need the truth as a witness? Because I'll tell you why. The cases of fraud, and especially cases of this nature of VBS,
yeah,
prosecutors basically rely on documents. They don't rely on oral evidence. Your only person who you may need oral evidence from is your bank manager. And in most cases, the bank managers are subpoenaed in terms of Section 236 of the Criminal Procedure Act. So now they don't even also need to attend unless if, you know, their evidence is somehow otherwise contentious, you see. So he may be a witness they don't even need. And, you know, I checked the indictment. The indictment indicates that they've got 43 witnesses.
Yes, 42, now, I think, sorry.
42, yes. Now they, I doubt if they need this man as a witness. But then when a person is intending to testify in the manner in which this guy is wanting to testify, what happens is that he pleads guilty, and then his trial is separated from the rest, and then and then he is convicted and sentenced, and then he comes back to court as a witness. So he must be given time first before he can become a witness.
Or, so what does this mean, that his trial needs to go forward first and?
Yeah, what will happen is that already these guys are 8 or 7, ne? When charges are put to them, all of them will plead not guilty. He will be the one pleading guilty. When he pleads guilty, his trial is separated from the rest, and then he is found guilty and sentenced, and then he comes back again as a witness, not as a co-accused. So now when people, I had some callers who they've called, they say no, co-accused evidence. No, that
it's
is
Abraham,
not
yeah.
Yeah, that is not the process which is going to be followed here. He's going to plead guilty, he's going to be sentenced, and then he's going to come back from the cells as a witness, not as an accused.
Co-accused.
Person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now
does it mean that you need to speed up that trial? The trial of the person who's going to turn state witness?
No, his trial is going to go in tandem with the rest of the guys. The trial is going to, I think that the trial will just unfold. All of them will have one date. They will plead, and then he will also plead. He will plead guilty, like he says, and then his trial is separated, and then he comes back as a witness. Or alternatively, before charges are put to them or him, he can make a statement in terms of Section 204 of the Criminal Procedure Act, wherein he will be granted indemnity from prosecution, and then he will testify. But I doubt under these circumstances if this will be the case.
Yeah.
Now,
do you say that based on his own confession?
Yeah, his confession is going to be taken in as an affidavit.
Yeah.
And it will be labeled Section 204 of the Criminal Procedure Act.
Mm-hmm.
And then now when he is a Section 204 witness, he is removed as an accused. And then he becomes a state witness. He's no longer an accused. He's a state witness. And then after he testifies, and then the court considers his testimony to be honest and prudent, he is granted indemnity from prosecution.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, thank you so much for that call, Joshua, and for the clarity that you've given as well. Let's go to Nina. Good morning, Nina.
Hi. Good morning. I'm Eldrin. I think this case is going to end up a case like the now I've forgotten his name, the Oscar Pistorius case.
Oh, Oscar Pistorius, yeah.
because there's so many layers of complexity. I just really want to make a point about anxiety and also about protection. And maybe I should just make the protection one because it's simple. There's no protection simply by being in an institution. In other words, if he needed protection, in other words, if he is threatened, and it makes sense that he would be, he would also have to have protection by the state. Mm-hmm. So that's just the point. But as far as anxiety goes, I think it's interesting to break down the forms of possible anxiety. And the number one point is that just being positive, you know, having found out that he's positive for COVID can create anxiety. But the second point that I don't see us really discussing in this society is that COVID is not only a respiratory disease. In fact, as we go further and further, it's very clear that's one aspect. It definitely is also neurological, and I think you've had medical people around enough to understand that there's neurological aspects which can impact one's thinking. So that, in fact, you know, there's those two forms of anxiety. And the third one in terms of COVID, all right, is that being in quarantine has also had bad impacts, as everybody in this country knows. It's a frightening thing to be locked up. And obviously, so those are the COVID issues around quarantine and obviously, I mean, around anxiety. And the point about if he is turning state witness, that would obviously engender profound anxiety, especially about his life, quite frankly, never mind anything else. Thanks.
Okay, then thank you so much for that, Nina. And so let's just quickly go back to one of the co-accused, which I find a bit strange considering that earlier on you said that you expect all of them to plead not guilty, and that is when it comes to Andile. So in the Mudau report, Andile is quoted as saying, the report says that Ramavonga admitted that he, through Dambele or Dambel, had received a sum of 15 million rand from Vere's banking account on 5 October 2017. He also admitted that he had received through Dambel and a company named Munyai and a series of monthly payments of 300,000 rand from the bank accounts of Vere Petroport. So from your understanding and what you're hearing from the people who are involved in this matter, why would Andile plead not guilty? Or is it just not guilty in certain on certain charges?
On why they received the payments and try and justify those.
Sorry, Ndayeto, we lost you there for a sec.
I think, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Yeah, I was saying, I think it's more on the technicalities on why the payments were received as opposed to, yes, I received, but they are illegal. So he would need to prove or justify why those payments needed to be made to him. I think that is the case with Brian Shibambu as well, with Brian Shibambu's company as well, where they admitted that they received payments. They would need to prove we were receiving payment, for example, for work or for whatever. That may have been the reason. But he was one of those that in court last month, the magistrate indicated that you do realize by trying to explain some of these matters in a bail application, this may be used against you in trial. And he said, yes, I want to make it clear that I did not receive any monies from VBS illegally, and I want that information on record on my affidavit. But also, just for our listeners' purpose, I think it was a tweet that you read earlier, Aldrin, talking about the bias that may be from the magistrate side. This cold case is sitting at the Palm Ridge Magistrate Court, but it is a commercial crimes matter, and it went to sit there because of availability of resources as far as courts are concerned. But the actual trial will be a high court matter, which will be presided over by a judge and not by a magistrate. And the justification of the 50,000 as opposed to the 100,000 was that circumstances around the other seven in terms of financial circumstances were considered, and even the circumstances against Truta were considered, and the magistrate felt that that would be a justice, and that's why the NPA as well did not oppose the 50,000 rand. If you go to the list or the indictment, mm-hmm. you would see that in terms of who benefited how much, Philip Truta falls under those that benefited the least, according yep. to the indictment.
Okay, so what would you argue that that bail was set based on how much they got? Or alleged to have received? Because then that probably points to the case the state then believes that they're guilty, or the judge, or magistrate rather.
I would think so, because if you look at the indictment itself and who received how much, the other seven appeared to have received large amounts of money, and it appears that Truta was only working as a facilitator of disbursing the funds and getting just a small drop from what the others were getting. But when you listened again to the circumstances, the financial circumstances of Truta, there was more. You didn't hear what we heard. Range Rovers, properties in Bryanston. You never heard all of those.
The asset base.
The asset base in Truta's bail application. We picked a lot of that in the other, and this, it was even after some of them were sequestrated and they still possess some of these assets. And you'd remember Truta also has been sequestrated, and according to his affidavit, he's only renting a property around the Redeport area, which his wife is assisting paying with a 12,000 rand salary.
Okay. Obriano, good morning.
Hello.
Hi,
how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Obriano?
Good. Let me jump in, man, and try to correct certain aspects and things. One, Joshua, who called, yes, he was a prosecutor, man, and currently he's an attorney. And and I agree with him to a certain extent, or to a large extent, insofar as Philip, his role will be at the ultimate trial. When he goes and he plead guilty, you know what had happened? There was a separation. They separate where a person indicates that he's going to plead guilty, and he is separated from the rest, you know? We call it, and even in the trial, there is a separation of trial. In this instance, what transpired, it happened before they could be joined all together. That's why they were separated, because of, I can tell you now, what transpired was, he intimated that he was going to plead guilty. That's why he's in his bail application statement. He indicated that. And now, formally, he will formally come and be admitted as a 204 witness, you know?
Which means what?
He's going to plead guilty. They deal with him, but on the basis that, you know, there is an indemnity. What they say to him, you become a 204 witness, provided that you give evidence to the satisfaction of the magistrate. You know, if not, he can be later charged together with the rest.
But how does he do that when we already now hear that he has a lapse of memory?
No. That one, it doesn't. Let me tell you, insofar as the affidavit and the lapse of memory, it is for a time being. It is because of anxiety. you know?
Okay.
And anxiety can be dealt with, and tomorrow he's okay. You know why? Let me give you a practical example. In so far as your reporter said, he said 30 years ago, or when he was 30 or something, yes, he was fine. He had that particular, you know, anxiety, and he was cured. It is curable, you know? He could not have been a CFO if he had a mental defect. Can he? No. So it's like today, if I'm suffering from depression, I am admitted to a psychiatric hospital. Am I mad for the entire for the rest of my life? No. And a mental illness does not mean you are incapable of understanding the processes in court. It does not mean that. So he will be admitted, if he's admitted, he will be admitted to a mental hospital. Observation is done. He is okayed. Let me give you a practical example. In certain instances, even a person, he is schizophrenic and he has gone berserk and killed people or committed offenses, he will be taken for a mental observation. And when he's taken to a mental observation, and they your other guy is there who's saying he's an attorney. He talked about lucid intervalum. You know, you're an interval of sanity. They check whether at the commission of a crime, were you incapable of understanding your actions? Were you in a good mental state? If you were there, then you'll be prosecuted. But if it is found out that you could not appreciate your actions, then you will not.
Okay. No, thank you so much, Obriano. Khalid, just quickly closing remarks from your end.
Look, the callers of Rihanna and Joshua, they raised good points, and they were right in what they said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but as it stands now, we only finished the bail application. We have to see how it pans out when it comes to the plea stage on the 8th of October. I think it's going to be heard, and then we'll take it from there. But the fact that Mr. Truter turned state witness, it now might create a domino effect, and we might find also on the 8th of October we have more of the accused who turned state witness.
So do you see that happening?
In any direction.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said, and I think one of those that would really need to start reconsidering whether their plea would be Pope Mkhodobiana. He was the treasurer, and in his affidavit, in the report by Terry Mutau, he also mentions instances where he had to go drop bags via helicopter, bags with money. Mm. So he may want to change his stance.
Okay. Do we expect any more arrests?
Yes. In fact, you would have noticed a couple of weeks ago, there was a former municipal manager, I think it was from Madibeng, that has been arrested, and that's the second tier of the prosecutions. They are dealing with those that were involved in municipalities.
Okay, thank you so much, Ndaye. So Netonze, as well as Khalid Osman, who's a civil and criminal law attorney. We've come to the end of this conversation. Just a quick one, a tweet here from Given, who says, justifying 50,000 rand bail, it doesn't make sense. And Dipuo says, I, Callis, my aunt lost 200,000 rand from VBS. To hell with people who stole money from VBS, whether black or white. It's 11 o'clock. It's time for Power News.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.